From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very somber episode of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I feel like Taps should be playing in the background. Candle in the Wind. You know, some Elton John going there.
Hold on.
Candle in the fucking Wind talk. What's the problem?
I just wanted to say that one of the great heroes is Burt Reynolds. If masculinity had a god on earth, it would be Burt Reynolds. Maybe Clint Eastwood. Like Clint and Burt were the, like City Heat. The reason that movie's no good is because there was too much masculinity. You had Burt and Clint in the same movie. Can't work, right?
And too much reshooting.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and too many chairs that don't break.
And truth is, America lost its Lady Di. This is sad.
Yeah, this is
really tragic. Lady Di.
This is the equivalent of Lady Di. I mean, when I heard Burt Reynolds die today, I rended my garments and screamed to the heavens.
I got phone calls, and, you know, just like Canadian friends did when Lady Di.
I am. I mean, America really has lost its defense. just drink it in. Drink it in. The beauty that was Burt. I mean. When I hear Candle in the Wind, I see images of the Bandit, Cannonball Run, Cannonball Run 2. Hello.
I see him cackling with Harambe up in heaven.
Yeah, he's up there with Harambe now going, ha-ha!
Now I know how it felt in Dallas on the fateful day in 1963.
I know. If Burt Reynolds was murdered, I would be Jack Ruby. I would find
him and kill him.
Yes, exactly.
He was 163 years old. I mean, man, he went and I murdered. He was dying anyway. He's been dying since the 80s.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just wanted to take a second at the top of the show. I mean, it may sound like I'm joking, but I'm really not. I love Burt Reynolds.
Nah, I was bummed. I was totally bummed.
So John. Let's take a second, Stuart, you know, just humor us for a second. I want to talk briefly, very briefly, about The Last Movie Star, which was kind of Burt's swan song. It was directed by Adam Rifkin, who did Detroit Rock City. And imagine if Detroit Rock City was about Burt Reynolds instead of Kiss. That's what this movie is.
Yeah, pretty much. That's it.
Except if Kiss was in the whole movie instead of just being at the end. You know,
yeah, but and if it was actually an entertaining, watchable movie, which Detroit Rock City.
I enjoyed Detroit Rock City, but, you know, yes.
Those disco guys who were acting all dice were beating their asses. Stoners couldn't fight, please.
No. But The Last Movie Star, you know, I saw you saw it recently. I watched it when I reviewed it for Christian Toto's website. I wanted to know what you thought of it.
I gave it like 3 stars. I said, you know, you have to be a fan of Burt to enjoy it because it's very meta Burt. And it's all about, really about his career, even though his characters are real to be Jewish, which I think was the only way Adam Rifkin could create some identity with his lead character.
Yeah. That's the thing is, when I saw that in the movie, that Burt's character is Jewish in it, I went, is Burt Reynolds Jewish? And I looked it up, and he's not. It was just something.
Yeah, it's like,
it was. It's just the one
Indian or something.
It's just the one
fanboy fiction. Imagine if Bite was a Jew. Oh, if only. So somebody's already done it for him.
But so what?
Bernie Reynolds.
But I don't know. I thought as a Burt fan, it was cool to watch a movie that was just about giving Burt his due. Yeah. I think, you know, where it's just about loving Burt Reynolds. Like, even Chevy Chase is in the movie as a fan.
And it's pretty likable.
Yeah. Yeah. Chevy Chase, you know, who I don't really think is very funny. I've never thought Chevy Chase was like a great comedy star. He's been in some good movies, but I've never.
Fletch is about all you need to do with Chevy Chase is Fletch.
No. Yeah.
Foul play.
Foul play. Rifkin said Chevy Chase wanted to be in the movie so he could be in a movie with Burt Reynolds because he'd never met him, you know.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, he said he was. Chevy Chase said he was a massive Burt Reynolds fan and had never met Burt Reynolds and wanted to do a movie with Burt Reynolds. And Adam Rifkin apparently knew this and orchestrated that. And when you watch the movie, their scenes together may as well not exist, but it's there so Chevy Chase can just bask in the glory of Burt Reynolds.
It's just Chevy Chase going, you gotta go. You gotta go to this thing.
You gotta go to this thing. It's just him laughing at Burt.
Yeah. You
know? Literally, the scenes with Chevy Chase are just him laughing at stuff Burt says. That's
they,
all
they
it
just
is.
Seem they're like improvised or something.
Well, Rifkin,
like Burt just reading
Rifkin cards. Said, and, you know. Rifkin said that Burt kind of ad-libbed stuff and was just making Chevy Chase laugh, and he just put it in the movie.
Right. Kind of like the old Tonight Show we never got when Chevy used to sub for Johnny.
Yeah, exactly.
So did Burt. Burt used to sub for Johnny. Back in the days when talk show hosts didn't take themselves seriously and finger wagged at most of the country.
I didn't get the appeal of Burt Reynolds.
John, before the show, ladies and gentlemen, John and I were talking. We were going, maybe we should do just a tribute to Burt, you know? And then we said, yeah, but Stuart will come on and go, I hate Burt Reynolds. And we'll go, oh, okay. And just move on. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I just don't get the appeal. I think the appeal is strictly limited to America.
Stuart, before you say anything, just saw a comment from a listener. Hope you guys do an episode about him. I can't think of anyone else I'd rather listen.
Be careful what you wish for.
About Burt than the MMC.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. Because the love isn't all around
John
the room.
John and Hunter both love Burt, so there you go. What were you gonna say?
No, I'm just saying, I think that the appeal of Burt Reynolds is strictly limited to North America. Maybe a bit of Britain. He never sells over here.
He was Benny Hill's favorite actor.
Hmm.
That was like when Benny Hill came to America, that was his big goal, was to meet Burt Reynolds.
Oh, he probably wanted to be, probably wanted to meet a guy that Benny Hill never could be, I guess.
Yeah. Apparently, I don't know, but that was his favorite actor. So I remember seeing that it was in a tabloid, in, like the National Enquirer. It was strange, but Burt had a.
Oh God, I'll take that with a grain of salt for sure.
No, Burt kind of used them as a PR firm because they would always get his side of the story when his divorce with Lonnie Anderson was happening.
Oh, when Lonnie Anderson claimed that he broke her jaw or some shit or something like that.
And it's like, okay. And then he ended up settling with her for like 200 grand or something. So I think she was a strange individual, but I heard her book is interesting for her viewpoint on that marriage, but I haven't read it.
You don't want to read it or you just haven't read it?
I might read it if I come across a copy at a library.
Did you see that? Did you see that when Reynolds was on Jay Leno? And he was going through his divorce. And
no, I only saw his Larry King appearance, which they made fun of on where they had Phil Hartman wearing like a toupee.
This comedian was telling a story. He's like, my wife says blah, 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 blah. And Burt kind of goes, I can't hear what you're saying because you're facing away from me. He goes, my wife, you know, I'm still married. And Burt threw water on him.
Oh, who's a comedian?
I can't remember, but it seemed friendly, though. It wasn't as hostile as posts about it would make you think. Right. I didn't recognize him, though, but they ended up having like a pie fight and stuff. It was pretty funny, but I mean,
it was probably scripted and planned. You know,
oh yeah, it definitely felt like you know, a fun thing, but it was still funny. I'm still married, and Bert goes, dumps water on him. This was in the middle of his divorce. It was great.
Well, he was notorious for punching out directors. Like, he punched out Dick Richards, the director.
Paul Thomas Anderson. Everybody, good. Like, that's good. A badge of honor is punching out to Paul Thomas Anderson.
He will rank high in my estimation just for that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was like, hey, you know, we talked about that. We did an episode on Boogie Nights, and we talked about, you know, we kind of talked about the Bert punching PTA.
Right.
Incident. And how, like, he felt that, you know, that this guy really thought he was the second coming of Scorsese, and Bert was just like, I've seen directors do this stuff all the time. This is not, you know, that big a deal. It was a great role, though, I think.
He's terrific.
But anyway, so Bert Reynolds, RIP, you know, much love. He is, I mean, the only one of the few deaths that could rock my world harder than Bert would be Clint Eastwood. So,
yeah, that's probably that may happen in about 20 years. When Clint hits about 110.
Get so, that countdown yeah, clock like, happening because Clint's not getting any younger.
Clint, I when Clint dies, I'm going to, you know, be in seclusion for a while.
When Clint, you know, dies, people are going to say, you know what? If Clint should go, touch wood, doesn't happen. But if Clint goes, say, in the next month or two, people are going to say, oh, man, first Burt Reynolds and now Clint Eastwood. I'm going to pop on City Heat as a tribute. They'll get 10 minutes in going, oh, fuck it, this film stinks. I'm not
watching
it.
Yeah, I know. City Heat.
So all the ones out there saying they're going to watch City Heat, forget it. Don't lie. You're fooling yourself.
If City Heat is, on paper, the most appealing movie on the planet, Clint Eastwood and Burt Reynolds, boom, I want to see it. But it's too much greatness. No mortal movie could sustain such a thing, so it sucks, you know?
Right. I think the only film that could have topped that would have been a film with Clint Eastwood and Charles Bronson.
Yeah. That almost happened with Once Upon a Time in the West. But anyway, speaking of Westerns, the movie we're doing this week is a movie starring another dead guy, Elvis Presley in Flaming Star. Yeah, do you like that segue? Wasn't that good?
Yeah, death comes through for once.
Quite a segue there.
Yeah, it was good. That was a good segue.
Like that black cop in Memphis on the Segway pulled you over.
Oh yeah, dude. Oh man, yeah. When we got,
yeah, you like that for a segue?
Yeah. He was, and he did like a stand up comic routine. He was like, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" I went. Yeah. No. He's like, you were going over the speed limit. And I went, all right. And he went, okay, have a nice day. he didn't give me a ticket or anything.
No.
But so Flaming Star, starring Elvis Presley. This is widely this and King Creole, I think, are considered to be the best Elvis movies. Would you say that and Viva Las Vegas as well? Would you say that's accurate, guys?
I would argue you want to stay away, Joe. It was up there for sure.
The one I can't finish. That's I can't get through.
Oh, you Judas.
I tried watching Stay Away, Joe, and I couldn't get through it.
It's not, no, I'm kidding. It's not great, but I have seen it once. But yeah, it's not great at all. I'll tell you what, yeah, of the Elvis films that I probably dislike the most is Live a Little, Love a Little. It's because it's not Elvis's performance in the film, or the girls in the film, it's certainly not that. It's the way, is it Nicholas Roeg who did that, or Norman Torog?
I think it was Torog, usually.
Yeah, Nicholas Roeg is a little too artsy to be doing Elvis movies, I think.
Yeah, right, I was getting one of those names in my mind, but
yeah.
It's the way that the film is structured, it's very frustrating to watch. I remember watching it on television many years ago, I'm thinking, Jesus, what is this film? So, yeah, it was an odd one. That's one of my least favorite Elvis movies. Probably that and...
You know, with me, I've seen... It's like there's Elvis movies I've watched and liked, and then there's Elvis movies I've turned off. that's kind of
how not all these films are winners. I mean, there's some massive stinkers in there.
It's funny though, when I sat down to watch Flaming Star, my wife watched it with me and she was like, yeah, whatever, I'll watch an Elvis movie with you. And the movie, you know, early on has a guy getting hit in the face with a tomahawk. And my wife goes, oh my gosh, I thought this was going to be another like stupid lightweight musical.
she wanted a harem scarum.
Yeah, she thought it was going to be harem scarum or something like that. And there's like,
LQ Johns gets it right in the face.
Busted. And she goes, oh my gosh, what am I watching? And it has these intense themes about race and, you know, identity and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But this movie, Flaming Star, 1960, directed by Don Siegel, who Don Siegel is a director I'm a very big fan of. He did John Wayne's final film, The Shootist.
Dirty Harry,
Riot in Cell Block 11, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Charlie Varick.
Escape from Alcatraz. He did Coogan's Bluff.
Yeah.
Did he do
I've never seen called Rough Cut. So.
Ooh.
Did he do The Beguiled with Eastwood? Was that Don Siegel?
Yes.
He did do The Beguiled. That was
a good movie.
Remade recently by Sofia Coppola. That was the sort of like weird Civil War sex movie.
And nobody remembers the Coppola version.
No, it came and went. Nobody saw it. He also did The Killers, which is Ronald Reagan's last movie.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Where Reagan, with John Cassavetes and Lee Marvin. And Two Mules for Sister Sarah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one Joe Carducci had some interesting things to say about, I think.
It has me wanting to watch it again and seeing if I'm disappointed in it, because he keeps kind of ripping into it a bit.
He really ripped into it, and it's one that I remember liking. I remember thinking it's an interesting movie, and I want to go back. When I read The Stone Mail, I wanted to go back and watch it again.
I liked it when I was 12. Was I wrong?
Yeah. I was a lot younger when I saw it. It's been sitting in one of those Clint Eastwood. It's in one of those like 3-4 packs, like with
Clint Westerns 4 pack from Universal.
Clint Eastwood, Play Misty for Me, The Beguiled, Coogan's
Bluff, Iger Sanction, Joe Kidd,
Sanction and Joe Kidd. Yeah.
Did you guys ever
go to the Iger Sanction?
Did Don Siegel do that Twilight Zone episode, The Nightmare at 20,000 Feet? Was that him?
Did he do that?
I don't know. That's an interesting.
I don't even know if he worked on TV, but it's possible.
I didn't know if he was a TV guy doing stuff like that. But
okay, he did Uncle Simon, and he did The Self-Improvement of Salvador Ross on The Twilight Zone, and so he did 2 episodes.
Okay,
so,
I'm getting somebody else mixed up then. All right.
So he worked with Robbie the Robot on Uncle Simon, I think.
but Don Siegel's a very good director, and like with King Creole, you know, it's Elvis working with a world-class director. On King Creole, he worked with Michael Curtiz. Mm-hmm. And Elvis was, you know, I think probably a pretty limited movie star. But when he was working with the right script and the right director, he could be very good. When they knew how to channel his talent, I guess, because a lot of his movies, you know, are fun, but they're, you know, kind of fluffy. And I think Presley really wanted to kind of be in more serious movies like this movie, you know, because Flaming Star is not a musical. It's a pretty straight out and out Western. It has a musical sequence at the beginning. It has Elvis singing a song in the opening credits, but it's a pretty straightforward, you know, Western with racial themes that are more complex than they would be today, I think.
Yeah. When you got a guy with a slightly dark skin playing an Indian role, I don't think you really get away with that these days.
Well, and also, I think though it it sort of shows both sides is not accepting of him, and as both sides having problems. Whereas I don't think today, like having recently seen a movie like Hostels, I don't think that you would get that kind of nuance today. I think it would just be like, you know, the white settlers are bad and Indians good, and it would be more black and white.
Do they even make films?
Anti-American agenda.
Do they make films these days, modern films, with depiction of Indians or Native Americans, or whatever you call them?
I just brought up Hostels, which is a movie I watched on the airplane back from Italy over the summer, and I went, okay, it's a Western. I'm going to watch it. It's got Wes Studi. It's got Christian Bale. I'll check it out. It was horrible. It was awful. And it was,
you know why it was horrible? Because it didn't have Graham Greene. It didn't have Graham Greene in it. That's why.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it had Graham Greene in it, I would have been happy, but it didn't. So it was awful. But no, the reason I hated it was because it was so you know, it's one of these ones where it's so simplistic with its reading of history. It's so school. It's so, you know, just sort of, I just rolled out of my sort of neoliberal teacher's public school class, and it doesn't have any of the, like, I think Flaming Star is a much more nuanced movie. It really shows a character at the crossroads of white and Indian culture. Whereas a movie like Hostels, which is a recent movie, is sort of just, you know, this culture bad, this culture good, you know.
So it was virtue signaling, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it was a terrible film.
They should have called it Virtue Smoke Signals.
But
there's my Letterbox review. I'll just post it without even watching the damn thing.
Yeah, do it. Go post it right now. but I thought Flaming Star was more nuanced. I don't know. Stuart, you're a very big Elvis fan. You, yes, and I have waxed poetic about Elvis many times. What are some of your thoughts?
Well, this one I've always said was one of my favorites, and I was curious again to see after a number of years, when I rewatched it the other night, if it would still be the case, and it was. I think I have a bit of a different sort of memory of it from first time around. For some reason, I was thinking there was a lot more songs in it than what there was, but there wasn't.
There's only the opening, I think.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah,
Elvis wanted the songs removed. They shot musical numbers, and he wanted them removed because he thought it made the movie goofy.
Because for some reason, I was thinking that,
because it's a pretty serious film. I mean,
yeah. For some reason, like I said, I was thinking that it was just chock full of songs. I'm watching it going, okay, yeah, there's that one in the start where they're doing that high starch collar song, which is just stupid. They could have really cut it. It didn't need to be there. But
they had him singing Summer Kisses, Winter Tears with the Indians. He was around the Indian ceremony.
Right.
And that was cut, so it was like, good. That would have been way too goofy.
But yeah, I mean, it was beautifully shot in nice, you know, CinemaScope or widescreen, whatever it was shot in, VistaVision, I can't remember what it was, but a beautiful looking movie. And yeah, it really, really held up for me again. It breezed by the 88 minutes or whatever it was on my DVD. I don't have it on Blu-ray. I don't even know if it's on Blu-ray at all. I'm not sure.
I've got the Twilight Time Blu-ray.
Oh, nice.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, because I'm a fan. I'm fancy like that, you know?
Uh-huh. Twilight Time shelf. Okay.
No, I got the Twilight Time shelf going. I've got the Twilight Time Birth of a Nation. I've got the Twilight Time Shay by Richard Fleischer.
Rima Williams.
I've got Twilight Time Geronimo.
Christine.
I don't have Christine. No.
Okay.
But you know, the Twilight Time shelf, it's really getting going. I got it during one of their sales. I saw Flaming Star and I went, oh, buying that, click, boom.
Yeah, definitely.
Shopping. There we go.
Wearing your Twilight Time t-shirt while you're recording this?
You know what? I think I'm going to buy one right now. Thank you very much. I'm going to buy
Mr. Twilight Time. There you go.
Mr. Twilight Time, you know.
Yeah.
All fresh in 2018.
I want to get the Twilight Time releases. I really need, even though I've already got the Arrow release, I need Remo Williams, and I also need the Twilight Time release of 10 to Midnight with Charles Bronson.
Hey, you.
Hey, how much money do you make if you waste on this shit? How much are you getting paid in your profession? My goodness. I tell you what, enjoy it now, because when the children come along, that's it. It's gone, brother. It's all gone.
This ends. Know. Yeah. I'm already, believe me, I'm already feeling it. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, Stuart, you've already been a fan of this movie, so revisiting it held up for you.
Yes, it did, and I'm glad it did. I was dreading the fact that it may sort of, withered away over the years, my love for it, and would have been like, ugh, this ain't so good. But thankfully it was, and I still enjoyed it. And, yeah, I'd still put it up in, say, the top three Elvis movies of all time, along with King Creole, like you said.
This and King Creole and Viva Las Vegas I are the three I always hear touted as the best.
But see, with me, with Elvis films, it's not so much his performance I'm looking for to say, wow, this is a classic Elvis movie. Yes, it is. But also, I can watch ones like... I'm also a big fan of Elvis films with scenery. So Blue Hawaii, Fun in Acapulco, I love watching those movies.
Sure.
Because I really enjoy the scenery.
It's not just about him.
Oh, the clear blue water in some scenes, and of course the women in the movies. Elvis, yeah. I was thinking to myself when I watched this, I thought, I feel sorry for any male co-star who was alongside Elvis in the film, because that they weren't getting none of the women on the set. It was all Elvis getting those girls.
Oh yeah,
it was like you had no hope in hell, and it didn't matter how good looking you were, you weren't getting them. Elvis was like, hey man, you ain't getting none of that. That's all mine.
He didn't like Ursula Andress. He didn't find her attractive. He was like, she's built like a boy, man. She's got shoulders.
You gotta have dark hair like Priscilla.
Yeah. She ain't got a beehive haircut like I have Priscilla do.
I got Priscilla. I'm making sure she's gonna be right,
Yeah. I'm just grooming that bitch. Got another couple of years before I can who cares? I'm not gonna wait now.
Yeah, the whole Priscilla situation was kind of creepy.
Actually, speaking of that, have you got the million-dollar quartet where you got Elvis, underage girlfriend, Jerry Lee Lewis, underage girlfriend?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I hadn't thought about that.
It should be called
the million-dollar quartet.
Million years in prison quartet, more like it.
Million-dollar grooming quartet.
Million-dollar grooming quartet, yeah. It's pretty creepy. No, I hadn't thought about that. That's interesting, because the Jerry Lee Lewis thing was Elvis sort of kept his on the DL, but Jerry Lee Lewis's, it was compounded by the fact that she was related to him.
Oh, no, that was worse, yeah. Yeah.
By the way, did y'all ever see the movie Great Balls of Fire?
Yes, it's on the theater.
Not good. I didn't think it was very good.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
No. Terrible film.
I saw it back on on VHS, I think it was.
Home owned!
Alec Baldwin is Jimmy Swaggart.
Oh, God. Okay. It's a lot of bad.
And I remember the guy who played Jerry Lee Lewis in Walk the Line, I thought was great. Waylon Payne, I think, was his name.
Actually, I don't remember.
I think his name was Waylon Payne, and I remember thinking that guy was a really good Jerry Lee Lewis. And, Dennis Quaid... they dubbed in Jerry Lee Lewis's voice.
And the pantomime is terrible.
It was Waylon Payne. I don't know, but I could be thinking of someone else. But he actually sang his own stuff, and he was very good. It's Waylon Payne. I just Googled. He's a country singer, but he played Jerry Lee Lewis, and he was fantastic, I thought. In that.
Didn't even have the fun stuff about Jerry Lee Lewis, like when he drove up to Graceland's gates and fired his gun at the gate or something.
Or when he shot his bass player.
Yes!
He got a gun for his birthday. He shot his bass player. It's great.
That's what you want. I don't care about the cousin thing. What the crazy shit.
There's a reason they call him the killer. It's because Jerry Lewis literally shot people.
Yeah. Then one of his wives drown or some shit, or was that William Shatner?
Maybe both.
Here. I'm too lazy to look up the Jerry Lee Lewis biography. It's just too much crazy garbage in there, you know?
Lewis is full of insanity.
Yeah.
Did he end up shooting his underage cousin? No.
No, he didn't. You know, he could have, though. I don't know.
Didn't shoot her when she was like 16, going, I'll put you down like the mangy old dog you are.
No? Great music like that is not going to come from a normal, stable person.
No, I agree with you there. I mean, Jerry Lee Lewis's music for the time was so wild and crazy. I mean, that guy was like the punk rock of his day. I mean, you know, you listen to his stuff and it's still exciting and energetic. You know, you still can get amped listening to like Great Balls of Fire and, you know, a whole lot of shaking going on and stuff like that. I mean, it's really good stuff. When Jerry Lee Lewis started doing country, it was like, okay, this is too mellow, you know?
Well, it sounded like Mickey Gilley, his cousin.
Yeah.
And they sound exactly alike. You listen to the country music that they recorded in the 70s and you can't tell them apart.
Speaking of that, Elvis got married once, right?
Yeah.
In his life. Yet I've seen that many documentaries where I've seen about 8 different people claim that they were the best man at Elvis's wedding. I'm like, what's going on?
Oh, jeez.
It's ridiculous.
Elvis Mafia politics.
Oh. Yeah, the Memphis Mafia is one of those things that's really messed up, you know, with all these guys who are Elvis's pal. Like Red West is a perfect example. With all these guys who were in his movies and, you know, they were all his buddies that he put in stuff because, you know, they were friends. And it's just, it's a whole hodgepodge that's, it's hard to discern what's fact and what's fiction.
There were so many people sucking on the tit of Elvis, it wasn't funny.
Oh, yeah, he was buying people cars. Elvis was a very generous guy. And because he was so generous, he attracted a lot of leeches.
Oh, I mean, heaps.
He was almost like a rapper in a way. You know, rappers are people that...
He was all about the bling, man.
I mean, yeah, Elvis was almost like... He was almost like a rapper, like where he would attract a big group of people. He had a posse, and these were all leeches and hangers-on who, you know, were pretty worthless people. And he would, you know, buy them stuff and treat them right. And, you know, he Elvis enjoyed buying stuff for people. He was just one of those guys who liked giving people stuff.
Hey man, I'm no longer Elvis. I'm now DJ Deep Fried Peanut Butter Sandwich, man.
Boy, had he lived long enough to deal with rap music? Who knows?
Oh, I think that a
little less conversation, a little more.
Yeah. No, that thing would have been, I mean, I think that's something that he would have put out on his own, you know, if he wasn't dead.
Oh, yeah. It was like, but you know, he would do stuff like hand out keys. Hey, man, this is like gold Cadillac of Shures. Take it. You like it? You like the string? Take the ring. Right, go on. That's how he was.
I think Elvis would have had a car dealership, you know, if his thing
did.
I've read
like 3 books on the Memphis Mafia, and there's all these contradictions and crazy stories, and all of the books are different. It's just insane stuff. It's crazy.
Wasn't there a story about Colonel Tom Parker that he always paid overs in his taxes to avoid being audited by the IRS or something like that?
Yeah, because there was something weird about, like, he didn't have a real citizenship or something,
right.
And he didn't want the government, if the government audited them, he would be found out, and he thought he'd be deported back to wherever the hell he was from.
Is he German? I don't know.
He's either German or Danish, or it was something weird. I read a book about him years ago and forgot about it.
German, Danish, whatever the case, I'm probably related to him, you know.
But it was probably, that was the reason, like, they paid so much in taxes, they didn't take any deductions. I always paid a shitload of taxes and bills and stuff. But he didn't want them to pop up on the audit form or whatever, and the IRS come look at them, so they overpaid constantly.
And I should say that also, Hunter and I did an Elvis episode many, many years back when we were together in Memphis, and if there's any overlap from this episode onto that one, or from that one, I should say, if you go back and hear it, it was a number of years ago, so cut us some slack if we bring up things twice.
it's we can repeat content far apart in tides of time.
And I reviewed an Elvis movie on the show that no longer exists, and as far as I'm concerned, never existed. So there.
Yeah. I mean, it's not out there anymore, so
yeah,
you know.
I did Viva Las Vegas. I can repeat the story.
It feels just like I'm reviewing it for the first time. You know,
so like, you know, Elvis is actually a cousin of mine, like by long, long distance. But
it's like me and Johnny Weissmuller is a distant cousin of mine. Yeah,
and that's all. It's like it's crazy.
Tarzan.
Hang on, you know. Elvis is a distant cousin of yours, John.
Yes. Yep.
Well, okay, you're both from Mississippi. Okay, I get that. You're both from Mississippi. I got that, right?
Right. Right. Okay, I can pare it down. I don't know the cousin relations because I don't even pay attention to that stuff.
Well, but have you ever heard John sing rockabilly music? I mean, you know, it's pretty uncanny.
It's pretty ear-shattering, but...
It sounds like Johnny Fest.
but no, my Grace family is from New Albany, Mississippi. New Albany is right next to Tupelo. And it seems that my grandfather was the cousin of Elvis's mother, Grace. And I don't know if she was named that because of the last name on the family in New Albany, but possibly. I never really looked into it much. And I didn't quite believe it until it was brought up at one of our family gatherings when I was a teenager. And I was convinced because nobody on that side of the family listens to Elvis. They don't like his music. They don't even care.
So if Elvis was alive today,
it's like, you know, all of the Presley family, they all became like sheriff's deputies in Tupelo and stuff. Like they didn't care. It's like him and you know, like they didn't listen to his music. They
so basically, wearing makeup in movies.
So basically, yeah. Right, you're saying that if Elvis was still alive today, you'd go up to him and say, "Hey Elvis, I'm a distant cousin of yours. Hey man, have this Cadillac then. Your family."
Yeah, exactly. You might give me a diamond ring or
John,
Rolex.
If he was still around, you could have gotten a Cadillac out of this deal.
You like this Rolex, man? Here it is.
You should be very angry that he did you dirty like this by dying of eating too many hoagies full of bacon and jelly.
The funny thing is, I was reading. I think it was maybe Priscilla Presley's book, but she said, like, he didn't really go back to Tupelo. Like, he kind of, you know, he didn't go back often.
Why on earth would you go back to Tupelo?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, he kind of ignored that family, you know, or that, like, those family members or whatever.
People,
you know,
you know why people know Tupelo, Mississippi? It's because Elvis is from there.
That's what drives our economy to this day.
You know that sounds amazing. I have no desire to go back because I am the only reason that place is interesting. Okay.
Yep.
Mr. Twilight Time shelf.
Mr. Twilight Time shelf right here. The only reason Tupelo is interesting is because Elvis is on my Twilight Time shelf.
You're a twat, seriously.
I wasn't trying to be insulting.
Yeah, okay. I know. But okay, what was your guys' thoughts on this? On Flaming Star?
John, why don't you go ahead? I've been yapping too much.
I liked it. I've only seen it once before. I rented a pan and scan videotape and didn't have as big an impression of it back then because people forget how much pan and scan could really hurt a movie. And watching it widescreen for the first time, I was like, yeah, it's pretty solid. It's based on a novel by Claire Huffaker. That's actually a man. Back when Claire was a man's name.
Are you kidding? I didn't know that. I was like, oh, this is some chick novel or something.
No, I'm not kidding. And then that kind of explains some of the potboiler nature of the script or the plot. It's got some sort of parallel storylines that kind of run into each other that it tries to do. That it admirably crams into its 88-minute running time. And but it's a little too much coincidence, but it's fine. It's probably carried over from the novel. But it's really solid. Elvis is obviously trying to do like a Marlon Brando type of acting or whatever with kind of just a desperate character.
Oh, yeah. Elvis was very interested in being taken seriously as an actor, so this would have been him really trying to push that, I'm sure.
Yeah. And he took the role seriously. It's probably one of his better performances. He's not playing Elvis. He's actually playing the character. There's some scenes where he gets to be tough and knock some rapists out and shoot guns and everything. And it's a solid film. I mean, Don Siegel was like the perfect style for it. And I was like, man, if only he had directed Charo. That's like might have been a more memorable movie. But yeah, it's a solid flick.
Poor Charo gets kicked in the balls all the time.
Yeah, and I didn't think Charo was that bad, but then I found out it was cut down from what was originally supposed to be like a hard GP, which was PG back then, movie with some brief nudity and more violence, and they cut it all out before they released it and trimmed it to a PG or G-rated movie. And I first saw it on the Disney Channel, but no, Flaming Star is the Elvis Western to watch. It's better than his first movie, which was a Civil War drama, Love Me Tender, which used to play on
movie was not very good. No. I tried watching it and I didn't like it.
Put me to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Love me tender. Love me true.
Slow film, and he dies in the end, and that's why he dies.
Jailhouse Rock was much better, and even that, I think, is he made better movies than that. You know?
Yeah, I think Blue Hawaii's better. I actually watched Blue Hawaii for the first time Saturday.
That's a popular one. People like that one.
And I liked it. I'd never seen it, at least all the way through, and it was really good. It was obviously a travelogue for Hawaii, and there was a great deal made for that because it's just visually just shows off Hawaii at its bluest and best. So it's
let's go to Oahu. We'll go boogie boarding.
It was sort of like it's a reminder that movies used to be escapism, and that we don't really see that anymore. Is this making a state or a city look great? And, you know, just having fun and not taking anything too seriously. And it's like oh,
James
wow.
Bond.
Yeah. James Bond movies used to be adult comic books. Now I don't know what the hell they are.
Did you guys ever see that movie with Elvis where he's at, like, at the protest at the Dakota Access Pipeline for, like, 2 hours and just he hates Whitey and, you know, protect our water? That was a good movie.
Oh, God.
That was my favorite.
God, that would be made today. That would be totally made today, too,
yeah.
If you were alive.
Yeah, I'd be
Elvis would be the Indian chief.
Yeah. I'd be Native American that day. And another language later on that night when I'm eating.
But yeah, it's such great fun, you know?
Yep. Bob Reden's in this one as well. I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, yeah, that's right. She was. My wife commented on that when we were watching it.
Yeah. Elvis would be on the set like, you know, see that broad over there, man? It's not called I Dream of Jeannie. It's called I'm Fucking Jeannie. And you ain't. Oh, boy, was that bitch back in the bottle when she's done. Hey, man, I'm going to do more of her than Dick Sargent ever did.
But, you know, I thought this was... I think as far as, like, Elvis movies go, this and King Creole are probably the two maybe most serious Elvis movies. But you have the serious Elvis movie,
yeah.
And then you have the like fun, like Viva Las Vegas, Blue Hawaii, like welcome. It happened at the World's Fair where it's Elvis, like going, it's a travelogue thing.
Yeah.
And so, those are much more common, I think, than the serious movie, but I don't want to act like I think the serious movie is somehow better because I do like the sort of goofy stuff. Too.
It's a good balance. You have some serious ones, you have some fun ones, you have some stupid ones, and you have some that are like middle of the road, like Change Your Habit with Mary Tyler Moore. Like, what's he doing?
Elvis. Where Elvis plays John Carpenter.
Yeah.
Yeah, plays Dr. John Carpenter, and he also utters the immortal line, last month, three nuns were raped, two against their will.
Jesus Christ.
Wait, oh my gosh.
He actually says that.
That needs to be a sound drop for next week's episode, I think.
There you go.
God.
We'll say John said this out of
run off the female listeners. There we go.
Yeah, there we go.
All three of them.
Yeah. And two of them are raped and...
Yeah, two. Two against their will.
Yeah.
Oh, my Elvis. Horrible. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Hunter, I got something we can divert away to. He touched me. Never gets old.
Oh, yes. Oh, I remember, yeah, we went to, when we were in when we went to Graceland, it was he touched me, and it had the Elvis videos with like there was like the Elvis gospel music, mm-hmm. and it was, you know, it was like the Lord touched me, but it just out of context, it looks really weird.
Hannah goes, "Oh, it must be made at level 8."
That's actually outside of his movie soundtracks. That's the best stuff he recorded in the '60s was his gospel
music. Oh, his gospel stuff is amazing to listen to.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's great. I have like an ultimate gospel compilation. It's just fantastic.
Do you think Elvis got better with his music as he got older? As he found himself more with his gospel stuff and things like Kentucky Rain, In the Ghetto, all those older songs, you know, those more serious songs he did. I've got that story. We got that story as well. We won't mention it on the show about In the Ghetto. Don't worry. Yeah. If you remember it, yeah.
I've got like all three of the studio box sets of the decades, like the '50s, the '60s, and the '70s. And I think the Sun Record stuff is stunning. I pulled it out a couple of weeks ago and listened to it because my son wanted to hear Elvis, and that it's still remarkable to this day. It'll send shivers up your spine. And then the '60s stuff is good if you take individual songs, but if you try to listen to any of those CDs for a long time, I mean, God, the songs just run together. He's just doing all these ballads, like he's trying to be Dean Martin and Perry Como as well as Elvis.
What about
it just doesn't
do the Clam?
Yeah, I mean the soundtrack stuff from the '60s is way more fun. Like everybody used to put it down as his lame stuff. It sounds better today. It sounds like stuff that the Cramps would record or something, or would have recorded. The '70s, though, is a comeback. Like, all of a sudden, he's doing this kind of country rock. I guess it would be country rockabilly. By the way, he was mostly played on country stations in the '70s. Rock stations wouldn't play him anymore because it was old people's music. And that stuff is remarkable. The '70s box set is a ton of fun to listen to.
Yeah. Does Sirius XM still have the Elvis Channel on there at all? Oh, no,
I think so.
Oh, they do still have it. Okay. No, they had it back in 2011.
I think it's still on there. They've got the Frank Sinatra channel and the Elvis channel.
Because I think they'll all that good stuff. I think SiriusXM broadcasts outside of Graceland, doesn't it? The Elvis channel.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Yes. It's out of Graceland. Yep.
Nice.
Is that worth having, Hunter? Satellite radio. You still have it?
I still have it. I like it. It's one of the few subscription services I still subscribe to. So,
yeah, I killed 9 years ago.
Do you ever listen to Eddie Trunk? He's
I don't. I have not listened to Eddie Trunk's satellite show. Shocking, as I know.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
probably
you've got
to our listeners.
Yeah, but you listen to the podcast.
I've listened to it occasionally, but I listen to a lot of like the 40 station and Ozzy's Boneyard, and I like Spa too, which is all like Tangerine Dream and Vangelis.
Okay.
So that's another favorite of mine. My wife and I like to listen to that when we're driving in the car.
Oh, nice.
I mean, you feel like Roy Scheider driving nitroglycerin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
or,
exactly.
Or Harrison
it's like,
Ford.
It's like we're in Sorcerer.
Yeah. Yes. So, not a great deal else about Flaming Star.
I don't think so. I think it's a movie worth watching. It's a good Western. I don't know. There's not a lot to like dive into with it.
No.
You know.
Yeah, it is what it is. And Westerns were pretty typical around the time this was made. I mean, they were just, you know, Hollywood was grinding out Westerns from every studio. You know, they were very, very prolific with the genre at that time. And the unique thing here, Elvis was a star,
That's what makes it kind of unique. Is it's a Don Siegel film, and it stars Elvis, and it's a Western. So that's all you really need to.
And it's got the guy from Psycho in it as well.
Anthony Perkins?
No, not him. John McIntyre, who plays his father in it. He was the one who was the guy at the end. He was the.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Norman Beach's mother has been dead and buried in Green Lawn Cemetery for the last 10 years. That's him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, I didn't make that connection.
And also the co-star Steve Forrest, who was the lead in SWAT, the TV show.
Oh, my God, I thought I knew that face somewhere. I was just going, where have I ever seen this guy from?
And I think he played the Baron on the ITC TV show. If anybody has a fondness for Lord Lou Grade action shows of the 60s, he was the star, the American star they did for the American sale. But yeah, he's done some solid TV work.
Oh, the Yanks rip off a British TV show? The hell you say?
No. The Brits would put a Yank in there to guarantee sales, because I guess they had problems selling The Saint just because Roger Moore was the star. It wasn't until they were in color that I think it was shown over here, or something like that. Somebody's told me some stuff. But yeah, they were thinking, okay, we need an American star to get that guaranteed American network sale, so they would get guys like Steve Forrest or Gene Barry or Robert Vaughn to star in their shows.
Mm-hmm.
And you would get a guaranteed TV deal in America. So, yeah, which they're still worth checking out. I'm not sure they would necessarily be better if they had British stars, but depends on who they would get.
They should have got Gene Autry.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. I would have loved that.
Yeah.
So
sing a song on a Lord Lou Grade show and knock somebody out.
So what would you give Flaming Star John out of 10?
I give it a 7. It's a really good movie. It's fun.
Yeah. Stu, what about you? Oh, yeah. John, finish what you were saying.
Well, no, I was going to add that I did read somewhere that back in the old days, summer movies meant, it not like it is today, where you just got a bunch of childish special effects movies. It always meant Elvis movies. Like, summer was dominated by whatever Elvis movie opened.
Elvis was a massive star. You know, people kind of write off Elvis movies today, but they kept making them because people went to see him, because Elvis didn't need to tour or record albums, because Elvis was a, you know, people, Elvis is thought of as a musician, but he was a freaking movie star, and he was the biggest star in the world for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, he was like Burr Reynolds, you know?
Yeah, never lost money. None of his movies ever lost
his
money.
His movies were printed money for the studios. He was a massive star.
You talk about concert films that we have done before in the past, and they've said some of the greatest ones out there, like we did The Clash, Rude Boy, and the concert footage in that is some of the best you'll ever see. I'll tell you what, I'll put anything up against Elvis on tour and his performance in that. That was insane.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And the other one he did, the 68 comeback special.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
I think that is... you talk about comebacks by any performer, that's about as good as you're ever going to get.
It's one step above Danzig's comeback special. Yeah.
When Danzig wishes he had a comeback special as good as Elvis's.
Where he and Doyle were doing acoustic Misfits songs.
Oh, no, you joke.
I forgot that existed.
That exactly sums it up. You forgot it existed. That's it. Their 68 comeback special is 50 years old today. You watch it. Not 50 years old today, 50 years old this year, I should say. And you watch it, and it's still electric to watch. It's
unreal. Dude, that 68 comeback is fire. It's good.
I wish I bought it on DVD. I should have grabbed it when it was in print. I did not know that was going to be out of print.
I got the 3-discer of that and the 2 or 3-discer of what it is of Aloha from Hawaii. I got them just before they started going out of print. I thought
I've got Aloha on satellite. I mean, on the vinyl there.
Yeah, of course you do. Yeah.
I just didn't think they'd go out of print. What type of world do we live in?
I know, it's so ridiculous. It shouldn't be out of print at all. It needs to, you know, that should be available for anybody who wants it to buy.
They do that because if people know it's always in print, they'll go, well, I'll just pick it up another time. So
it's
sales
like the Disney vault, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're not as sort of, you know, dictatorial with their films like Disney. I'm like, get it now before it's gone, get it now. Not like
that. Boy, what do you see most of the Goodwill stores? All this Disney VHS. If you're looking for any Disney movie, just go to your local thrift store.
When I worked at a video store, the only they kind of started phasing out VHS, but the only VHS they would still buy is Disney VHS that was it still moved. People still bought it, you know?
I just thought about, when you mentioned about the Goodwill store, I saw Amy, Hunter's wife, on Instagram, put up a picture. She goes, moving all the stuff, it feels like living in a half-price books with all this stuff. All these vinyl and movies.
She's not wrong.
No, no, not at all. So, get the Twilight Time shelf down, get the Arrow shelf now.
You know, yeah, I've got the Arrow shelf.
Got a Criterion shelf as well?
What?
Got a Criterion one?
Yeah, I've got the Criterion shelf, the Arrow shelf, the Eureka shelf, the Twilight Time Kino Lorber shelf, you know.
Are you serious, or are you just you shit around?
I'm being absolutely serious.
Oh, well, I have a Mill Creek shelf, so suck on that.
Oh, boom! Oh, that's Zolly Becker's gonna come and fight you.
Yo, they're so cheap.
Yeah,
8 movies for $4.99.
Scream and Shout Select shelf. So there you go. Zolly's gonna come fight me. So
No, now you're gonna get an IED. Like tied to your mailbox.
Exactly. So if you've got a film franchise released by different companies, instead of grouping them all together, you've actually got to go to the company and find it in that. So if they say of an 8-part series, 3 of them are Paramount and 3 are Warner Brothers and 2 are whoever, instead of having them all together, you've got them in Warner Brothers areas and Paramount areas and stuff, have you?
You know, when it's all scattered around like that, you know.
You're a moron.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I can't work that out. But okay. See, me, I just group my shit together. So if it's like the Halloween movies, for instance, they're released by different companies, I just fucking put them all together. I don't care.
Yeah, I've gotten to where I'm more like, I want my shelf to look consistent, so it's kind of
just labeled.
So
you want all those Paramount logos on the side just line up nicely, do you?
Yeah, the Criterion logos line up, the Arrow logos, you know, I just want it all to be, you know, conformist and consistent, because that's the kind of person I am, you know?
It's funny, because I have, like, genre.
With some DVDs, I have that, but those are the ones I kind of have out of sight. You know, stuff that's on a shelf that people
can't. Because it's not consistent on the binder.
This is the designer in me coming out. You know, this is the you know. Yeah.
OCD.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you have to touch the stair handrail 3 times before you walk downstairs and. Yeah,
exactly.
He follows you around with Clorox wipes. Anything you touch,
precisely.
Wipe it.
Yeah. It's like you put on these slippers before you walk down the hallway.
Yeah. It probably gives you like the elf slippers, like at Sanford and Son, where the gay guy hires them to move his piano. But yeah, he makes them put on the elf boots or whatever.
Oh, that's ripped out of a Steptoe once that episode from
the 60s. Yeah, well, it was a remake. Hell. It actually gave Galton and Simpson credit based on the script by Galton and Simpson.
Yeah,
do that on the original. Then.
Yeah, because there was a guy who had to, in Steptoe and Son, they had to, the two Rag and Bone men, Harold and Albert Steptoe, go up way the hell up, like about 7 or 8 flights of stairs to a house, and they had to move a piano for this very, very fastidious guy who was a bit, you know.
Yeah.
And, he says to them all, what size shoe do you take? And they go, what? And he goes, you have to put these slippers on before you walk in the house. So I thought that's... Okay, so they've just redone that, right?
Yeah, because they got to remake the script. But does it have the father doing the, hey, I think he's... And then he twists his hands to do the gay sign?
Yeah, well, no, not in that. Not in these steps, obviously, but yeah.
That's Red Fox's addition, then. Probably his improvisation.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Son Roku app now, so there you go.
Yeah, nice. All right, and I'm going to give Flaming Star a 7.5. I thoroughly enjoyed it still.
Yeah.
I actually maybe want to go back and watch some more Elvis movies over the weekend, since I got a little bit of downtime that we're getting to finally get to all the shit cleared away in this house.
Sweet. Yeah, I gave it a 7 as well. I think it's a really good movie. Everybody should go see it.
The DVD cover I've got of Flaming Star, which is an Australian release one, is just
put no effort into it whatsoever. It just, I wish, seriously, I mean, obviously these films came out with posters when they were released in the theaters. Just put the damn poster on. How? Why are you making people like me, who's starting to do custom Blu-ray and DVD designs, have to go back and do it myself? It just, it makes no sense. Just, I want to see a picture of Elvis looking, sultry on the front, and got his, powdered lips, and he's got a cowboy hat. I don't give a fuck. It's not the cover I want for my shelf. I want the original poster art. It's not that difficult. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, they ship me off these companies. But, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like how the James Bond covers got more boring every time they reissue them. To now they're just like black and white photos of the actor playing Bond.
No, not me. I've got those custom ones I got off that guy in Germany who made the, with the original posters when they came out.
Oh, wow.
Like, and they look kick fucking ass on the shelf.
Because I love a Thunderball poster where he's got the rocket pack and he's flying.
Yeah, that's the cover of the, that's the cover of the one I printed up.
Great poster.
Oh, yeah.
Better than the movie. Great poster, though.
Yeah, the poster's actually better than the movie, correct? Burt Reynolds gone. The last of the hard men. Save for Clint Eastwood. Yep. That's it.
Yep.
After Clint Very goes, sad. Who's left of that era?
No one?
No one.
That's it.
Can Clint's you say still... Joe Don Baker? Joe Don Baker, maybe, but...
Is he still alive?
Yeah,
he is. Not a very long leading man career, though. Didn't really cash in on the success of Walking Tall like you'd think he would.
No, he was kind of... He almost became sort of a goofy Ameriburger joke in the James Bond movies, but...
Yeah.
I've heard all about these Walking Tall films, but after doing Wacko last week, I thought, I want to see that Walking Tall, because so I heard so much about it, but never, ever seen it.
First one's good. First one was like the dark night of its day.
Really?
Like, people were going to see it again and again. And the sequels where Jonah Baker is replaced by Bo Vinson, they don't work too well. They're pretty bad.
No.
The first one, though, is very worth watching.
Well, I will definitely have to track it down one way or another.
Shout Factory put it out, so it should be in print.
Yeah, I'm not spending $40 to get it freighted to my house. Screw that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Amazon Australia needs to open up soon.
Oh, it's open. It's just their shit.
Oh, they're shit.
They are literally considered a joke here. It's like, oh, yeah, well, Amazon's coming. They're going to, change the way that their retail's done in this country. They haven't done shit. They're literally dying. So
they ran into actual Australian law, because I think in America they're allowed to do whatever the hell they want.
Here they got the government said, okay, you're now going to start paying tax, and they said, nah, fuck that.
That's so screwed them over. Yeah, they don't pay taxes in America.
Nope. Well, the Australian government said to them, okay, you send items to Australia tax free. We're now, because we have a 10% goods and services tax here, so like your state tax. But our tax is built into the price. They were saying that you have to now pay the 10% tax that you're getting out of the price you're charging us, and you're going to pay to the Australian government. And Bezos was like, nope, we're not doing that. We're just not going to send to Australia. So they said, screw that. You're not then. And I reckon there's a secret thing going on to stifle the growth of Amazon over here. Because places like JB Hi-Fi are really hitting a panic button at one point when Amazon first came out, that they were going to see sales dwindle, but they've actually flourished. Their growth has gotten even bigger in other retail stores. So, yeah, Amazon's really starting to feel the pinch here. Like, you can't just come in and do what you want. And I will say this. I watched a documentary on YouTube. One of the very few things I do watch on YouTube, because I'm not very fond of it. But the thing was that it was about a guy who went undercover working at Amazon, and oh my god, it's like, it's disgraceful.
I'm sure.
It's like people running around like rats in cages, and just, they got these insane bloody targets they got to meet, disgusting it was. Should be fucking ashamed of themselves.
They also, in America, they pay them so low that they qualify for food stamps and welfare benefits.
Really?
So,
oh my goodness.
Yes. Yeah, Amazon needs to get taxed on all that shit.
Yeah, well,
because they're cheating, they're fleecing the taxpayer.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody's got anything else?
Yeah, I think that's about it for this week for me.
Yeah, and this weekend I'm all Burt Reynolds and Elvis.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching. yeah, that's what it's going to be, a lot of Burt for me this weekend.
Get some masculinity on the TV.
Yeah, let's get it. Let's watch Heat. Not the masculine people. Let's watch Heat with Stick. You know?
Let's watch a version with real men.
Watch Shockey's Machine.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
I'm just trying to think if there is a Burt Reynolds film I really like. I did like Cannibal Run. Cannibal Run. Yeah, I did like Cannibal Run. And Cannibal Run 2 is on Blu-ray here, so I may go pick it up if it's part of a cheap special just to get it on the shelf. I do like those two.
What about Smokey and the Bandit? Eh?
I've never seen it.
The first one is worth looking at.
Yeah, meant to see it, as Jedi Cole says. I don't know. Look, I mean... John and I did do an episode, well, a failed episode, never came about. What was the film we watched? Malone? No,
I think it was going to be Sharky's Machine.
Oh, yeah, I watched Sharky Machine. Like, oh, fucking horrible. I couldn't stand it. I'm just sitting there going, I don't get the appeal of this guy. What is it? Like, he can't act, really.
It was the man's man appeal. It was like, he was the guy you would talk to at the bar. He was just like everyday guy. Yeah, maybe, but... It's funny because people will say, he played a bully or whatever. But it's like, his movies, I don't remember him being much of a bully except in Cannibal Run, where he's like slapping Dom DeLuise for flubbing lines. There, he's acting like a bully. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he seemed like a pretty, like a nice jock or whatever who wasn't going to, screw around with you or whatever. Like in Deliverance, he's like supposed to be the alpha male, and then he gets taken out, halfway through the movie, and John Voight has to handle everything. It's a movie star presence doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly.
Like he's a man's man. It just doesn't exist in movies. There's nobody today that's close.
So if you want to see a recent Burt movie that doesn't totally suck, check out The Last Movie Star.
Yeah.
Give that one a recommendation.
I'm really struggling to just pop on a Burt film. I'm sure all of America is going to hate me after this is heard, but...
This is definitely going to alienate you from our countrymen.
No, even
well,
more.
Well, Gen Z, millennials, they don't get Burt either, so,
Yeah, but they got an excuse they're a millennial, I'm not.
Right. It's kind of like... He was kind of like our... what's an Australian equivalent? Jack Thompson? That'd be one?
Yeah, that'd be about right, but I don't like Jack Thompson either. I can't fucking stand him.
Yeah, he seems like a guy who could work on a ranch, could be a cop, could be a farmer, a sportsman. He could be any of that stuff. He wouldn't be a cubicle gerbil like a lot of men today, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt or whatever, who just seem like cubicle slaves.
Would you say Russell Crowe's in the same vein as Burt Reynolds?
No. Russell Crowe didn't have half the talent of Burt Reynolds.
Oh, okay.
I'll put it this way. Early on, Russell Crowe was on his way to that type of role. But then then he started to look like Bud Spencer, and it wasn't happening anymore.
Then he became Bud Spencer.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, he needs to make a comedy with like Ryan Gosling, where they're like Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer. And get in do a remake of like Crime Busters.
And then the guy who did that should then go do a new Predator movie,
Oh, yeah, he did. There you go.
Some kids were going, oh my gosh, there's a new Predator movie coming out. I was like, that's by the guy who was the goofy dude with the glasses in the original Predator. And they're like, what?
I was like, yo, that's by the guy who created the Lethal Weapon series.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a guy who gave us Last Boy Scout, man.
Yeah. And wrote Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. The movie that's making come back on pay cable.
Good film.
Yep.
Damn good film.
Good movie.
Great.
All right, kids. Well, let's wrap it up. Anything else we got to say before we sign out?
I hate Barack Hussein Obama, who is nothing but a long-legged devil right out of the pit of hell. And if you don't mind my saying it, Jesus hates him too.
Thank you, Garo, for coming up to the show. All right.
There's our shadow banning on iTunes and Twitter.
Yeah,
next month.
Oh, he's been kicked off of YouTube as well, Pastor Manning.
Oh, he has.
Yeah, he's had his account terminated. And did you see that that secret recording that surfaced about a month ago of him? Him trying to hit on some like 16-year-old member of his flock, asking him for pictures and shit. Yeah, he's cooked.
I think I heard about that.
Yeah, he's cooked, man. Manning's like, he's gone. Yep. Been found out.
Jeez, what is it with this ongoing theme of the underage weapon?
He's like, if you've got any pictures of yourself, you can give me. She goes, no, I don't take pictures. And he goes, oh, you're a very attractive young lady. He's like, yeah, Mama Elizabeth's not here. God, this is creepy shit. Listen to you.
Ooh, so that's Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, and now Pastor Manning.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
The new member of the Million Dollar Quartet.
What?
Oh my God.
Pastor James David Manning. All right.
All right. Yeah. Well, he
wasn't going to last. Poor guy.
All right. Well, with that, I'm just going to go ahead and say adios.
I will say megada.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.